and welcome, brothers and sisters. I'm Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voices is Here We Stand. It's October 31st, 2021. Our truth still marching on, fighting slavery today and always. We're here every week, and we're inspired today in our program by the example of not only John Brown, but so many who will never know, who fell and will fall in this struggle, unknown, unnamed, and yet their sacrifice keeps us going. In times like the present, when fear and madness grip official society, there is no safeguard for any of us, save our conscience and our capacity to act according to it. Acting for what is right is the only measure by which we will now be judged, the only measure. If we surrender our right to think and speak freely, to assemble and travel freely, and to hold on to our inherent liberties, it will not be because of some flu virus or dictatorship or the orders of strangers. It will solely be because we have allowed ourselves to become enslaved out of fear. Well, today on Here We Stand, we're going to look at a very stunning report that came out. It's actually a press release that's coming to tomorrow. You're going to have a sneak preview of it today. It's an announcement issued by the International Common Law Court of Justice. I'm going to read it in a minute. But it's very much talking about this age-old enslaving institution called the Church of Rome and the Vatican. Bergoglio, the so-called Pope, Jorge Bergoglio, Francis, announced he will be coming to Canada soon to go to the site of the mass murder of children by his church and by him in Kamloops, British Columbia. Well, in response to that, and in response to also growing evidence about his personal complicity in crimes against humanity, this announcement will be going out tomorrow morning. Let me read it to you. It's a breaking global news announcement from the International Common Law Court of Justice. It says, arrest order and warrant issued against Pope Francis by International Court. $10,000 reward and amnesty offered to detain Jorge Bergoglio for crimes against humanity. And this went out from the Common Law headquarters in Brussels, in New York, and in Vancouver. The court that forced the resignation of Pope Benedict in 2013 has issued an arrest order and warrant against Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, for crimes against humanity, along with a $10,000 reward for his capture. The International Common Law Court of Justice issued the order and reward today, along with an offer of amnesty from prosecution to any Catholic official or clergy who assist in the detaining of Bergoglio. And I think that's brilliant. A copy of the order and warrant is posted along with this notice, and it will be up by tomorrow at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates. Now, let me read to you part of the court statement that accompanied the order. Quote, our prosecutor has in his possession documented evidence and eyewitness affidavits that attest to Jorge Bergoglio's personal complicity in child rape, torture and trafficking, ritual killing, medical genocide, obstruction of justice, and a general command responsibility for mass murder and other crimes perpetrated by the Church of Rome. Bergoglio is subject to prosecution as an indictable individual under both common and international law, and he will be so prosecuted by our court. We're offering a reward and immunity for prosecution to anyone, and especially to any of Bergoglio's church associates, who assist us in detaining and prosecuting him. For more information, murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates. That will be going out tomorrow all over the world through all the major news outlets from the International Common Law Court of Justice Criminal Trial Division. Now, with it, I received the actual copy of the arrest order and warrant, which orders that Bergoglio surrender himself to the sheriffs of the court or to responsible police officers that we will deputize for immediate arraignment on the charges and specifications being presented by the public prosecutor of the court. Anyone who has a copy of this warrant is authorized to detain and to take part in the detaining and transporting of Bergoglio to the court for his lawful prosecution and to confront anyone protecting him. This order and warrant is issued again on tomorrow, the first day of November 2021. It's signed by Dominique Redvers Dufour, who's the Secretary of the Common Law Court of Justice. And the third thing that came, and again, you can see all of this posted tomorrow, it's actually a big reward notice. It's got a priceless picture of Bergoglio sitting there shaking his fist into a camera, and which I think is appropriate, with his angry expression on his face. And it says a reward of $10,000 U.S. is hereby offered by the court to anyone who successfully helps us to arrest and transport for prosecution Jorge Mario Bergoglio. And so that's some of the news. And I want to remind people that midweek now, every Wednesday, I do a broadcast and printed column called And It's Weekly. And in that report on November 3rd, this Wednesday, I'll be going into a lot more detail about some of those specifications. But let me tell you right now, what's significant about this is that it's building not only on evidence we've had over the years about him, but recent material that's come out of the growing evidence of the links between the Vatican Bank and Big Pharma, especially Pfizer. Now, Bergoglio, Pope Francis, came out as early as early 2020 and said that it's a moral obligation for everyone to get the COVID shot, and the world needs a single global political authority to enforce those shots on everyone. That's a direct quote from Bergoglio. Francis is pushing for one world church, one world government, and he says everyone needs to get this shot. Well, no wonder he's saying that, because the Vatican has $5.3 billion invested in Big Pharma. Big lion's share of that is with Pfizer, of course, but with other affiliates of Bayer and other, originally there were Nazi pharmaceutical companies that had a very long relationship with the Vatican. So that's some of the reason why Bergoglio is being prosecuted. Also, there's evidence, and I'm authorized to mention this, the prosecutor has evidence from eyewitness affidavits and other documentation that for at least the last 3 to 4 years, Bergoglio has been personally authorizing the use of children from Catholic orphanages, schools, and other facilities for drug testing experiments. And that, of course, is a practice that's gone on in the Catholic Church many generations, but Bergoglio is personally implicated in these things. And we know for a fact that it's linked as well to his link to the criminal networks involved in the Ninth Circle, which use the same children in ritual sacrificial killings all over Europe, North America, things we've documented at murderbydecree.com. So that's part of the big news today. And as part of that, I want to lead into a discussion of both the political and the spiritual aspects of what we're dealing with when we're talking about confronting the oldest corporation on the planet and the so-called Church of Rome, which really has its fingers in everywhere. You know, it establishes and brings down governments. It something like two-thirds of all the money in the world is channeled to two banks, the Bank of International Settlements in Geneva and the Vatican Bank. So it's, of course, a huge money laundering and criminal organization. And I want to flag to you as evidence of that, one of the books I've written that you can get on Amazon, just put in Kevin on it, the name of the book is Dethroning a Rogue Power, Why the Vatican Must Be Denied Membership and Presence at the United Nations and in the World Community. This is a book I wrote just last year. Again, you can see the link to it, murderbydecree.com. But what it is, it's an entire small book with all of the evidence showing not only the Vatican crimes, but how the Vatican insinuated itself into the United Nations illegally. It claims to be a government, which it is not under international law. It has all the privileges and none of the responsibilities of a government and a UN member. And so I want to just kind of share some of the evidence of this for a few minutes, because when we say the Vatican is a criminal body, people say, well, what do you mean by that exactly? Now, there's an international law describing what are called transnational criminal organizations, TNCOs. And a TNCO is something which, for example, is engaged in human trafficking, is engaged in money laundering or arms dealing or the death of human beings. Now, on all those counts, the Vatican qualifies as a transnational criminal organization. And as a TNCO, don't forget, it's convicted in a common law court trial whose verdict in February 2013 forced Pope Benedict to resign along with three other cardinals. The TNCO definition fits the Vatican perfectly, and I'm going to give you some of the evidence right now proving that. And don't forget, as a proven TNCO, the Vatican can and must be not only prosecuted, but immediately expelled from the United Nations. And governments are obligated to sever all diplomatic ties with the Vatican and expel their papal nuncio. Otherwise, they're aiding and abetting a criminal body. But let's look at, first of all, the evidence of human trafficking. Well, the Catholic Church has had a very long history of kidnapping, trafficking, exploiting, and causing the death of people, especially women and children. These crimes are, in fact, an institutionalized feature of the Church because of its traditional role in the forefront of European genocide, colonialism, and religious persecution. And it's by the operation of its boarding schools, Indian schools, orphanages, child labor sweatshops, and hospitals, all designed to exploit, control, and even exterminate whole groups of people. In addition, the standing Vatican policy, known as crimen solicitanus, provides a sanctuary for church child rapists, actively encouraging not only such rape, but the whole organized system of child trafficking that goes on in the Catholic Church. Because for every priest who rapes a child, another 10 clergy are actively concealing and facilitating that crime, as is every Catholic in the world, as are obligated to do under this Vatican policy, that if they don't conceal the crime, they're excommunicated from the Church. Now, all of these crimes are not just done by random individuals. They're coming from the highest level of power. They're papal edicts coming out of Rome. Child trafficking in Catholic societies tends to be concentrated overseas now. Places like Thailand, of course, which are a hotspot for Catholic child trafficking, especially of indigenous children of the Akha indigenous tribes there, but also through Catholic-funded boarding schools like the Scarborough Foreign Mission Society in Toronto. And Catholic front groups exist in Guatemala for trafficking children, like the Mayan Missions Incorporated, run by an open child rapist, the Catholic priest William Auth of Lansing, Michigan. Those are just a few examples. But it's also closer to home because church-based child trafficking is equally present all over North America, operating under the guise of religious and government child care agencies. There's even what's called a baby for adoption protocol in hospitals where Catholic girls who get pregnant out of wedlock are targeted. They're given lactation suppressants. They're brainwashed by the church to give up their baby, and then that newborn baby is trafficked for a lot of money through a whole network of compliant police, social workers, and so on. This is evidence of some of the child trafficking. Secondly, laundering money for organized crime. That's a well-proven crime. Jonathan Levy, a Washington, D.C.-based lawyer, has documented that thoroughly and has tried on numerous occasions to sue the Vatican for its money laundering for the mafia and other organized crimes, but time and again, the U.S. Attorney General and the Italian government blocked those actions. Well, the Vatican Bank was actually set up by Mussolini in 1929 to launder criminal money. The IOR, as it's called, was established clandestinely, but it's been a major conduit for criminal activity. And that includes not only laundering money for organized crime, but as we mentioned, handling about two-thirds of all the money in the world. Now, the IOR, the Vatican Bank, is a secret society. You can't look at its books. You can't know who it's on the board of directors. And through that kind of secrecy, it can do things like buy up arms during the Argentine War between Britain and Argentina over the Falklands Islands in 1982. The present Pope, Jorge Bergoglio, arranged as Archbishop of Buenos Aires to have his buddies in the Argentine military junta get a bunch of Exocet missiles, thanks to Vatican funding. That's one of the reasons he was so popular with the junta and was their PR man all over the world, even though they were killing up to 30,000 of their own people at the time. So that's, you know, again, the evidence of that is thorough. And arms dealing, the Vatican, the Catholic Church is heavily invested in the ninth largest military contractor in the world, the Leonardo Fenomenica Company of Rome. The Vatican owns the biggest small arms manufacturers in the world, Beretta Limited, heavily involved in these kinds of operations, not surprisingly because as the first Jesuit pope, Jorge Bergoglio is part of an institution that was a militaristic society. The Jesuits, founded in 1543 by the mercenary soldier Ignatius Loyola, went out on a rampage to destroy any enemy of the Pope, and that included, of course, England. They sided with the Huron in Canada against the English allied Mohawks and basically exterminated as much of those nations as they could. So this is a long history of violence, and all of those things show that the Vatican qualifies as a transnational criminal organization. So the question is, what are they doing inside the UN? Well, one of the reasons that they're in my book, Dethroning a Rogue Power, goes into that, is they've made all these secret deals over the years. They basically invited themselves into the UN in 1965. Oud Thant, who was the Secretary General, made a backroom deal with them just to sit their delegates there, even though by UN rules there had to be a vote on their entry, they had to be a government or a state under international law, which they're not. They don't qualify under any of the four criteria of what a nation state is under the Montevideo Conference of 1933, which is the thing that defines, you know, nations under international law. And so they're doing all of these maneuvers. They get on UN human rights commissions and knock down anything which violates Vatican policy. There's a long record of that. I really urge you to get this book. That goes into detail about what we're talking about. The Vatican, their crimes are not only limited to the obvious horrible genocide that we've documented at murderbydecree.com, the ongoing satanic networks that they operate in, the eyewitnesses who you can see online at that website who have been part of that whole crime from birth, these intergenerational satanic families that operate under the guise and as active Catholic Church members with strong direct ties with Jorge Bergoglio himself, including the present Queen of the Netherlands, an Argentine like he. They've been in a long financial relationship for a long time because of their joint involvement in the satanic networks in Belgium, in the Netherlands, and in Argentina. And as a final note on all of this, Jorge Bergoglio went from a lowly bishop I'm sorry, not bishop, priest. He went from a low-level priest in Argentina to the head of the entire Jesuit order in just a dozen years. And the reason that happened, one of the reasons, he became intimate friends with the military junta in the late 70s and during the 80s. They killed over 30,000 of their own people. Bergoglio was their PR man all over the world, and he did what the Catholic Church is infamous for. He actually trafficked the children of people being held in the political prisons. After the parents were murdered, these children were put into loyal fascist Catholic homes, just like under Franco's dictatorship in Spain. And in fact, I've actually met with some of these survivors in Barcelona a few years ago. And so the Catholic Church made billions, literally billions of dollars out of these human trafficking networks while propping up these military dictatorships. Jorge Bergoglio, Smiley Francis, Smiley Frank, as they call him, the poster boy now for the Vatican, who looks so beneficent and loving all the time. Well, he's got blood all over his hands, both then and now. Don't forget, it's always the local child rapist who has the most sterling reputation. The biggest shit has to have the greatest window dressing, prettiest window dressing surrounding it. Well, to give myself my voice a rest for a few minutes, I'm going to play for you the famous speech I was to give at Oxford University in the spring of 2016. I was invited to go there and debate a Catholic cleric about whether there's any good in the Catholic Church. I shit you not, that's what the issue was about. But of course, I got the whole debate got canceled before it could happen, and I had my invitation withdrawn. But it's a very telling lecture I gave, and after that, playing this, we're going to come back and talk more about the spiritual aspects of engaging the oldest criminal society on the planet. So here's my talk. We'll be back after that.
Good evening. I'm Kevin Annett, and tonight I'm going to give you a lecture that I was to present to the Oxford Union, which is the oldest debating society in the world. In April 2016, I was invited to come there, in Oxford University in England, and debate a cleric of the Catholic Church over the issue. Funnily enough, the topic was, is there any good in the Roman Catholic Church? Well, as so often happens on these occasions, the invitation to me was unexplainably withdrawn about 2 weeks before the event, and the debate between me and him never happened. So I thought it would be good to post online for the world to see exactly what I was going to say that night. Good evening. Let me begin by saying what a pleasant surprise it is to be able to join you all here tonight. The last time I tried to give a public talk in England, at a London rally to protest child trafficking by church and state, Your privately run UK border agency saw fit to arrest, fingerprint, jail me, and then finally deport me from your country without giving a reason at all. So be that as it may, and it usually is, I especially want to thank you for having me here tonight, having the courage to have me here tonight. Tonight's topic for debate is framed rather tellingly. Is there any good in the Roman Catholic Church? And assumedly by that is meant its holding company, the Vatican Incorporated. Well, the very wording of the subject's interesting because it implies that no, there isn't any good at all. Let's search for some. Of course, trying to locate integrity in a corporation is like looking for love in a brothel. So perhaps the question of tonight's debate's already been answered. My job's done, we can all go home. In any event, the title of the main event tonight is a bit confusing, beginning with the term good, which is, after all, a completely relative and morally ambiguous term. The Spanish conquistadors and their slaughter-blessing Catholic priests thought that they were doing good when they wiped out millions of non-Catholic people for their own good. The Vatican's Inquisition that barbecued and tortured to death Christians who disagreed with Rome was officially entitled an auto da fe, which means act of faith. Even the present so-called liberal Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, speaks of the goodness and zeal of the Franciscan missionaries who worked to death thousands of Aboriginal men, women, and children on Catholic slave plantations in California. Well, some things never change. Bergoglio also recently pardoned some 10,000 of his own child-raping priests, no doubt in the same spirit of doing good, at least good for his own institution. Human beings, especially when goaded on and justified by religion, always adorn their crimes in a halo of goodness. I've had personal experience of what I speak about. For over 20 years in Canada, I've lived and worked and documented alongside these folks who have lived through this story, the reality of genocide in Canada, perpetrated mostly by Catholic-run Indian residential schools, where over 60,000 children died. Half of these children never came back because at the hands of the priests and nuns, they were ritually tortured, routinely starved, trafficked, experimented upon, flogged, gang-raped, and killed en masse with smallpox and tuberculosis. Not one Catholic priest has ever gone to trial for any of these crimes, nor will they. These killers are above the law as it stands now. And having had the misfortune of speaking with enough of these scum, I know that these complicit clergy are still convinced that they were only trying to do good to the little brown savages by killing their bodies to save their souls, to quote their buddy Thomas Aquinas, one of the founding theologians of the Catholic Church. So perhaps what we need to do is redefine the term good in a better way, using this simple definition. To do good means to do no harm to others and to let them be themselves. Of course, under that definition, you immediately disqualify and condemn the Roman Catholic Church, which has killed more people than any institution in human history. The Church of Rome's body count is well over 50 million corpses, ever since it was made a legal corporation by the Emperor Constantine in the year 317. All right, that may all be true, sputter the defenders of Rome. So nobody's perfect. But look at all the charitable works the Church does all the time. Isn't that good? Well, in that sense, perhaps tonight's topic for debate should have been entitled instead, Was There Any Good in Pablo Escobar, the head of the criminal syndicate known as the Medellin Drug Cartel? Because Pablo engaged in lots of charitable good works for the poor folks of Colombia. Just like the Roman Catholic Church, of which he was a dues-paying member, Pablo used his ill-gotten loot to build shelters for the homeless, playgrounds for some slum kids, and soup kitchens for the hungry. Of course, that charitable money was covered in blood and paid for by the early deaths from drug addiction of the very same people he was helping, but still, he was doing some good, wasn't he? Now, my analogy between Pablo Escobar and the Vatican is more than fitting, since not only are they members of the same club, but also the Vatican Bank is heavily invested in the international drug cartels, as well as the arms and human trafficking industries that go along with it. GMO companies, Big Pharma, the biggest small arms company in the world, Beretta Limited, even dozens of online internet porn companies, all of these 100% Vatican investments pay for the goodies doled out to those deserving poor people who kiss the claw that feeds them. But let's take on directly the suggestion that the Roman Catholic Church, as the world's richest and least accountable corporation, plays a major role in providing charitable sustenance to the world's needy. Let's ask, what percentage of the Church's annual revenue actually goes towards charitable works? Well, it's an important question, not only for the debate tonight, but because the only legal basis for the Church to be exempt from paying taxes under the Law of Nations is that they must devote all, not some, but all, of their collected revenue for either the advancement of religion or charitable works. Well, right there, you cannot go at the Roman Catholic Church unless someone wants to explain what money laundering for the mafia, buying cruise missiles for third world dictators, or issuing routine bribes to politicians and governments all over the world have to do with either religion or charity. What percentage of the Catholic Church's revenue goes towards charity? Actually, less than 1%, at least in America. For tellingly, that's the only country in the world where the Church consistently publishes any of its financial records. After all, the Vatican is a closed, self-governing, totally unaccountable body, like any secret criminal society. But that inconvenient, lingering notion of a separation of church and state found in the American Constitution requires that even the Catholic Church has to create an appearance of transparency. And so according to the U.S. government, in the year 2013, the Roman Catholic Church in America had a net revenue of $13.4 billion. And that's just in one country, where only about 15% of the world's Catholics live. By projection, the annual income of the Vatican must be in the hundreds of billions of dollars, not just from all those collection plates from those saps, but also from its massive global investment portfolio and its secret financial concordat agreements with over 100 governments that channel a regular percentage of your tax money into the Vatican Bank and all of its criminal behavior. But coming back to America, the one country where a light is shone on the murky underworld of Vatican finances, according to the same self-audit of the Catholic Church, of the $13.4 billion raked in during 2013, only 1.1% of it went to charity. But since half of that amount came from government grants to Catholic aid societies, in reality, a whopping 0.6% of the income went from the bank accounts into charities. But since those charities are mostly owned and operated by the Church itself, it just means that one hand of the octopus is feeding the other. Quite brilliant, don't you think? One half of 1%, friends. The truth is that the Roman Catholic Church is not a force for charitable works. Just look at the books. It's in fact a huge criminal racket, a money-sucking corporation that kept afloat by every taxpayer in the world. Okay, so let's turn to the other basis for the Church not paying a dime of taxes, the advancement of religion. What percentage of its time and money goes towards advancing its particular, and I might say extremely violent, religious creed? Less than 10%. That's the time each week a priest spends conducting prayers, masses, or catechism classes, according to the Church itself, according to a statement from the Vatican's Governing College of Cardinals, who in 2014 issued an internal report concerning the training and ordination of its priests. The main job of the clergy, according to the Cardinals, is the material and social upkeep of the Church, guarding the building, the safeguard of its traditions and operations, and the expansion of its income and membership. Like in any big corporation, somebody somewhere tell me where God, let alone Jesus Christ, enters into that whole mess. Okay, strike two. In case you didn't know, that's a baseball term. I don't play cricket. The third and final strike against the Roman Catholic Church, and you got to watch out for that term because the word Catholic means universal, which it is not. The final strike against the Catholic Church lies in its real and not imagined nature. Once its enormous pretense and lie is pulled back and we see it for what it is historically and today. But to do so and to pierce the mental fog surrounding the Vatican Incorporated, we have to realize that the papacy is not a Christian church at all. On the contrary, it is in every respect a cult of emperor worship derived from late 3rd century Rome, not from the historic Jesus, not even from the early Christian church. This fact is crucial if we're to deal with the mental confusion of many people, atheists included, who ponder helplessly, but how can a body that preaches about the love of Jesus cause mass murder, genocide, and institutionalized child rape? Of course, the simple answer to that is that it's always the worst child rapist in town who has the most sterling reputation. The latter is needed as a cloak by any crook. The bigger the felony, the sweeter the coating. Talk, my friends, is easy, especially from a pulpit. But let's not forget what Jesus himself warned, quote, many false prophets will come in my name and say, I am the Christ. But do not be fooled. By their works, you shall know them. Bingo. By their works, you shall know them. Well, we can see the works of the papacy all too well. Conquest, brutality, just wars, genocide, inquisition, and the crushing of the human spirit. And it all began when the Roman emperors Aurelian and Constantine created the Roman Catholic Church on the murdered bones of the early Christian Church. The church was an extension and continuation of that other big killing machine called the Roman Empire. Proof of this, you don't have to look any further than the Pope's official title, which is Pontifex Maximus, which in Latin means the Great Bridge. Between guess where? Heaven and earth. That was the Latin title of the emperors of Rome, starting with Aurelian in the year 275, who also assumed the title Deus et Dominus, means God and Master. One man who's become God. Well, first that was the emperor, but now today to a Catholic, it's the Pope. Christ is no longer the link to God, but a man is, elected and elevated blasphemously over humanity, even over God, by other old men in funny hats. Well, not surprisingly, every newly elected pope is also given the title Vicari Christi, which is even more blatant. In Latin, it means the replacement of Christ, the one who replaces Christ. In black and white, it's right there. Catholicism, papism, is the replacement of Christianity, an empire of conquest and wealth relying on the means of the world and not the way of Christ. Just look at the body count. And listen to these admissions of guilt right from the horse's mouth, or I should say ass. Statements from various popes down the centuries that have never been contradicted or repudiated by any of their successors. Pope Boniface in 1302. We declare it is necessary for every human creature to be subject to the Roman pontiff. Pope Leo in 1520. The pope is Christ himself on earth. Pope Pius in 1929. Fascism is simply the doctrines of our faith made the law in government. Pope John in 1962. No man may enter into Christ unless he be led there by the sovereign pontiff. Pope John Paul in 1996. Have no fear when men call me Christ on earth, for I am he. Pope Benedict in 2008. You need not go to Christ for salvation. Come to me. Pope Francis in 2016. Christ made himself sin, made himself the devil. That's new. For our salvation. Only the church and its magisterium can claim holy infallibility. Have you had enough? I know I have. Well, is it any wonder that such a power-obsessed, megalomaniac religion makes itself unaccountable, sees nothing with its crimes, and uses the image and words of Christ himself to delude and soak its millions of dupe followers to believe that a bit of a communion wafer or a papal blessing or the right amount of cash delivered into church coffers will buy their way into heaven? As if one can. Well, unfortunately, I saw it for myself when I was last in Rome in 2011. Right there in the Vatican Museum, a display board for buying indulgences, just like out of Martin Luther's day. Special papal blessings cost you only 150 euros. The more you spend, the closer you get to heaven. Although, be warned, apparently, according to the sign, apparently God prefers credit cards to cash. How right when Pope Leo in 1520 said, this myth of Christ has served us well. Well, the most dangerous group in the world is a super wealthy cult that sees itself as God, superior to everyone, and therefore justified in doing whatever is needed to protect itself and rule the world. A cult, in other words, like the Church of Rome. What other being than a cult can operate according to a criminal policy like Crimen Solicitanus, which has been binding on all Catholics since the year 1929. That policy states that whenever a child is raped or otherwise harmed by a priest, the police are not to be told, the victim is to be silenced, and if anyone speaks of this, they are excommunicated, thrown into hell for snitching on a rapist. Clearly, the God of Rome, like the Mafia, cannot tolerate a snitch. Better instead to operate under a global criminal conspiracy to aid and abet child rapists and killers than to cost the church a lawsuit or save a child's life. Heaven forbid. And yet, despite all of this criminal arrangement, the world keeps wondering why there's so much child rape within the Church of Rome. Are we all that blind? Do we really think a lion isn't going to eat a gazelle? Well, John Acton, a British politician, said, "Absolute power corrupts absolutely." He was referring to the Church of Rome when he made that statement, something conveniently left out of the history books. The Church of Rome is absolutely corrupt, but it also corrupts whoever is near to it, like all who attend it, who fund it, who associate with it, or rent its halls, or smile on its policies, or look the other way at all its public relations gestures. All who do so partake in that corruption. And under the law of God and mankind, those human accessories are equally guilty of all its crimes. The only good that can be said to come out of this most violent, corrupt, and anti-Christ body in history is how its evil awakens people to the need for a return to the simple words, witness, and spirit of Jesus himself, a spirit that has always been the chief adversary of the Church of Rome. Jesus founded a community of called out people, a remnant not of this world, a congregation, not a church. Nowhere did Jesus speak of popes, of bishops, of rituals and ceremonies by which someone would mediate him and God to others. He said that the kingdom of heaven lay inside each of us, not outside in a communion wafer or a religious ritual. That inner kingdom of Christ alone is the guide of all true Christians, who must come out from and be separate from all these vile, false and violent churches that deny God in practice and kill children in practice. And that's the task of any deluded soul still caught in the fatal grip of Rome and its blasphemous illusions and depravities. As America's founding father said, we hold this truth to be self-evident. And one of those men, the second U.S. president, John Adams, said, quote, "A free government and the Roman Catholic religion can never exist together in any nation or country. Liberty and popery are opposed," unquote. The nature of an ancient corporate evil like the Church of Rome does not change over time. It simply alters its appearance, because it comes out of the dark ruler of this world, the one whom Jesus said, "He is a lie from the beginning, for he is the father of lies," Satan. It's a good thing to free ourselves from a lie as huge as Roman Catholicism and as criminal. As free-born men and women, we are made for the truth, and when we recognize it, our hearts and our minds breathe freely and we return to our natural sense of liberty and independence. From that place of freedom, we are empowered to take action to stop criminals in every high place, whether they be popes or presidents or prime ministers. For we, the people, are the source of all sovereignty, of government, of law, and of religion. We can and must stop and arrest and confine child-raping priests when the police and courts refuse to do so. We can and must shut down the churches that traffic children and have hidden their crimes over centuries, like the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church of England, the United Church of Canada, all of these criminal bodies. For the life of one child is more sacred than all the fanfare and rituals of any church anywhere. Well, Jesus had his own prescription for child killers. He said, "Whoever would harm one of these innocent ones should have a millstone placed around his neck and be thrown into the sea." Well, I wonder what Jesus would say about an entire institution that mocks God, murders with impunity, rapes and murders children, and protects those who do so. Is there a millstone that is big enough to sink such an institution? Yes, there is. It is we, the people. I thank you.
And we're back. That was actually the Oxford Union that invited me. It's the oldest debating society in the world. And, well, no wonder it was squelched, eh? Well, in the last few minutes here, I'm going to reflect a little bit on that in another vein. Before I mention that, though, if you get another one of my books, it's called Here We Stand, like the show today, The Call of the New Reformation, Summoning God's People in a Time of Judgment. And in that is a copy of something that flowed right out of the finding of Ratzinger guilty of crimes against humanity in 2013, because the next year at Easter, I and a bunch of people in Europe went to the oldest Catholic church outside Italy. It was in Holland. And we did a really kind of another exorcism like the one I did in 2009 outside the Vatican. And we issued what's called a Global Emancipation Proclamation, an order. And it was both a political and spiritual statement. It said basically, you know, the alleged power, both earthly and spiritual, of the Vatican is nullified. People are freed from any obligation to it because it's of an anti-Christ nature. Its power in the world is manifested, is based on the suffering and the torture of the innocent. It's satanic in every sense possible. As a matter of fact, if you look at the Catholic Mass and the satanic black mass, it's all based on the same idea, that the blood of the innocent gives us eternal life, whether the innocent is a newborn child, in the case of satanic rituals, or Christ himself. Because don't forget, in the Catholic dogma, you are literally taking in the blood and the body of Christ, the literal body of Christ, when you have communion. It's transformed by the action of the priest into an act of cannibalism, essentially. So going back during the Reformation, and the Protestant movement recovered the idea that, no, it's a symbol of something spiritual. But, you know, this is the fact that, you know, the political and the spiritual merge together in this. And I want to put this on the context of what's going on in the world, because in the last decade of the 20th century, there was a revolution, but not the good kind, not the kind we had expected. It was the birth of a new political order, and it represented the capitalist system's bursting of the constraints of national boundaries and formal democracy. That new order we call a global corporatocracy, or an omni-corporation. The direct and unmediated rule of international capital through its own oligarch mega-state. Now, this system of corporatism came out of the Catholic Church as a political economic system, was pioneered by Italian and German fascism in the 1920s and 30s. That was in response to the economic collapse after World War I. And what this corporatism did is it took big money and fused it with the state and crushed all independent organizations, democracies, civil liberties. So it was based on the original Catholic notion that one ruler, one emperor, one pope had to rule everybody. And that emperor now is the corporatocracy. And eventually that'll be one corporation. And in spiritual terms, predicted as that representing Antichrist, which you read about in the book of Revelation. It's a political and a spiritual and a social reality. Well, Hitler pioneered that corporate estate much more effectively than Italy did, because he had the industrial might to do it. And he created what's called the first permanent arms economy, a whole society geared to permanent war. Now, that Nazi model was so successful that it was picked up by all of the Western powers after the Second World War. Hitler didn't lose. He got morphed into all of the governments of the world, especially the United States. And there's a good book about that written by a guy called Jim Mars, M-A-R-R-S, called The Fourth Reich. It shows how Nazi Germany was transplanted into America, which led to the Cold War and, ironically, not only to the situation we have now, but to the collapse of both the American and the Russian systems. You know, and so democracy, socialism, all those traditional categories are gone. They've been wiped out. You have simply one system now, the corporatocracy, and that's why they think they can tell you to put on masks and take a shot and there'd be no repercussion. Again, remind you to follow my column on Wednesday. I'm going to go into that in more detail. But anyway, after 1945, this bacillus of the fascist corporatist system metastasized and eventually infected the whole world. And that's what we're dealing under now. But even more basically, long before that, you know, political and economic phenomena happened, there was the spiritual reality of the Church of Rome and the fact that it was a huge imposter. It was the nullification of the early Christ movement. That symbol that they all carry around all the time, Jesus' body, corpse on a cross, it's a literal depiction of the fact that, yes, they killed Christ and his movement, and they created Christendom in its place. I mean, Christ never founded a church that would save all of mankind. That's a church idea, that if you have Christ mediated to you through the religion, you will be saved. That's not at all what his words say if you examine them carefully in Scripture. We're not meant to save other people. In fact, what Jesus was always talking about was a remnant, people set aside to be what he called the kingdom of heaven. Like, he was never going on, only in the Gospel of John do you see him going on about, I am the way, the truth, and the life. John later was a creation about 150 years after Christ. And it's only the Gospel of John that the Vatican tends to use. The other three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, what's called the Synoptic Gospels, he never says, I am the Son of God. He talks about the kingdom of heaven, consisting of those people set aside by God to create a new reality on earth. And obviously, he didn't say anything about a church, popes, sacraments, bishops, any of the things that are attributed now. The Trinity, as a term, is not even referred to in the Bible. But all these rituals act in a way to enslave mankind. All of the thing having to do with formal Christianity, it's all man-made invention. What Jesus said he was establishing was a special gathering of friends, a fellowship of equals, a congregation. Now, I just want to flag that word because it's really important. A lot of blood has been spilled over that word. Because in 1525, a poor English scholar named William Tyndale was the first writer to translate the Greek word ecclesia as congregation, not church. Tyndale's actions led to the Geneva Bible, which overturned the false Church of Rome and cemented the revolution. It cost him his life. He was burned to the stake for it. But now, that distinction, a congregation is simply a group of people gathered together to make decisions, like an assembly. It's not a church. And these are two diverging notions of what spiritual witness is all about in the Christian tradition. So what's interesting is the Geneva Bible was used basically to found the first American Republic, the Puritan settlers in New England, that said people had to govern themselves. They created the first constitution called the Mayflower Compact and then the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut. They were based, the constitution, the first constitution for America, came out of a congregational gathering saying, there is no authority over us save God, no king, no pope. We govern ourselves spiritually, and so we can govern and must govern ourselves politically. So that's why these notions, the reality, our spiritual reality, being self-governing people, reflecting the self-governance and liberty of God, not to be governed by other people. There is no human being the head of the church. That's why my ancestors and we today reject both Anglicanism, who believe the king is the head of the church or the queen, or papism, which says the pope is. No, you go back to the original source and Christ is. And that notion led to the American Republic, the first society in human history that said people govern themselves. Well, they did that not accidentally. They did it because they had that notion of self-governance in Christ alone and under God alone, within natural law. So I want to put all of that in context, you know, when we talk about the crimes of the Vatican, Bergoglio coming to Canada, and now, because of this announcement we made earlier, that he faces arrest if he comes to Canada, that people, we the people, are authorized lawfully to make that arrest, to deputize the police to help us to do that, to deliver him to judgment in front of the common law court. And don't forget that common law court can be convened wherever you are as an extension of the International Common Law Court of Justice. Read all of it, murderbydecree.com. The political movement that grew out of that, the Republic of Kanata.ca, all of that is found as a logical extension of our first campaign 25 years ago to expose the genocide. And I can tell you back then, I had no idea it would lead to all of this. But this is part of our normal evolution and growth. If, as people, we do like John Brown did, and at some point take up arms against the system. It's interesting, Malcolm X, before he was killed, said the only white man in the world he would ever trust was John Brown, because he took up arms against his own people to free the slaves. And that's the measure by which we have to look at everything. Are we willing to act? Because a lot of people these days are willing to talk a lot, and that's all you ever hear, unfortunately, on the Internet. You don't see action. You don't see courage happening except in small doses. We need to extend that, people. If we're going to stop these child killers, we have to do it ourselves. Now, there's a whole way to do that, to get deputized, to do common law sheriff training. Write to us, write to me, angelfire101 at protonmail.com. Write to ITCCS office at protonmail.com in relation to the common law court stuff you've heard about. And also, this Wednesday, I'm going to be going into more detail in my weekly column, Annette's Weekly, it's called. It's posted now under breaking news at republicofkanata.ca. It'll be up there by Thursday, just like this show is up by tomorrow at bbsradio.com/herewestand. And finally, one thing I did want to mention is that people are always saying, you know, this police state we're in now, it's some kind of weird imposition that came out of nowhere. No, this police state and what it's doing and the mandatory shots and all of this stuff, it's grown out of who we are. It's always been our society. It just hasn't affected you before now. Now that it's affected a lot of people, more people are waking up to it, and that's a blessing. But we have to realize that we personally each have to go through a great fire till we get to the point of real awakening, which is manifested as ability to take action against your own system, your own culture, your own people, because that is the enemy, like it or not. Well, it's been a good show. And one final point on that, if you want to be involved in these direct actions to stop Bergoglio when it comes to Canada and to unite with the people conducting the real investigations into genocide in Canada, write to us, itccsoffice@protonmail.com, murderbydecree.com. You can see all the books I've mentioned today on there. And don't forget, people, this show costs money, believe it or not. About $250 a month we need, $250 US. So to donate to this and all of our work, write to me, angelfire101@protonmail.com. And write to that, too, if you want to subscribe to my newsletter. You'll get it every week, guaranteed. So on that note, I'm going to end on one of my favorite songs. And, of course, some people get upset over this song because it uses the F word. But, of course, what's more horrible, using the F word or the reality that it's describing of slaughtered children? And don't forget, this is Samhain, my people's Celtic New Year, Samhain, otherwise known as Halloween. This is a satanic high point today. This is one of the days on which children are ritually sacrificed. It's going on as we speak within Catholic churches and under the guise of that false, murderous individual called Jorge Bergoglio, who we are going to arrest. So remember that today. This is a matter of life and death, and it's affecting children as we speak. So it's up to each one of you to take action on that if you retain your own heart, mind, and soul. Now, as I was saying, the final song is by Tim Minchin, and it's called the Pope Song, and it's very explicit, and you should play it. We actually played it once when we occupied a church, and some of the people in the pews actually loved it. So on that note, stay strong, stay clear. This is Kevin Andy, Eagle Strong Voice. We'll be back next week live. Carry it on.